Session number 27077, John Ross, Reel 1.
Can you tell me when and where you were born?
Yes, I was born in, in Hampstead, London, in 1920. My father was a tea merchant in the city, and I grew up in Hampstead, went to a prep school in Hampstead, a rather famous one, Heath Mount. Quite a lot of well-known authors went, and then I went on to Shrewsbury. Is this the sort of thing you want?
Yes.
Then I went on to Shrewsbury School, because various relatives had been to Shrewsbury, although it was a long way away, and finished at Shrewsbury in 1939, having got an exhibition to Cambridge, to Corpus Christi College, in 1938. And I had always intended to do medicine, and got my first MB while at school in Cambridge, and always meant to go up to Cambridge as a medical student. But the exhibition I got was mainly because I did very well in zoology. So I changed my mind, which was very rash, and thought I'd become a zoologist of some sort, which was a fairly unusual occupation before the war. And so I saw zoology people in Cambridge and went and arranged and did zoology as a main subject in Cambridge at the same time as the war broke out. And I realized I wasn't going to be exempt, not being a medical student. So I went to the recruiting office in Cambridge and put my name down to be a gunner, because that has also been in the family too, from the First World War. And so I was at Cambridge for the first year of the war, and then at the time Dunkirk, I suppose it was, or just after, everything sort of packed up in Cambridge, and we were given the possibility of exemption for some reason at that time to complete the TRIPOS examination. So I went to the tutor in Corpus to talk that over, and he said, no, I wouldn't stay on in Cambridge if I was you. It's quite likely, anyhow, the Germans will be in Cambridge by next autumn. So I went ahead and I left Cambridge and joined the Home Guard and worked with them until I was called up. I'm so sorry. In October 1940.
Your time in the Home Guard, how did you find that?
Well, it was rather ridiculous. We were evacuated from London, a family, to Beaconsfield. And I found that there was a Home Guard set up there, led by a rather good character called General Pollock, who'd been a general in the First World War. I think he was the husband of Enid Blyton, the famous authoress. And as I had plenty of time, they put me into the sort of headquarters office, where I sort of did all sorts of jobs and ran around in trucks delivering arms and phosphorus bombs and heaven knows what around units, and putting up sort of barriers on roads which might have been used. It was fun, but nothing more.
How did you come to join the army? How did you come to join the army?
Well, I was called up, and I'd put my name down to be a gunner, and I hoped in field artillery, but I was called up into an ACAC setup as an ordinary gunner, and I think probably with having been in the OTC at school, but although I'd avoided it at Cambridge, I could have gone straight into an officer's training. But I wasn't particularly interested, and I found myself going to near Aldershot to a camp with a whole lot of chaps from London, which was a fascinating experience. There were one or two of us from university or school, but most of them were East End characters, And after a month, quite a few couldn't even march in step. You know, it was a wonderful mixture of people, very good for one. And it was interesting joining the army. Things were in late 40 in a hopeless condition. I mean, there wasn't enough even military clothing for us. There were no proper uniforms to be issued. We were given denims. And I remember we didn't have boots for a long time. We had to use our ordinary civilian shoes, no headgear, no proper army gas mask. We carried our civilian one around. I mean, one looked absolutely daft, and the training was extremely poor. And I tried to get out several times, thinking if I went back and did medicine, I'd be much more value. But, of course, that wasn't very popular.
How did you find the training itself? Did you learn? What were you taught?
Well, there was military training on heavy anti-aircraft guns, as well as ordinary sort of drill and activities and so forth. And I think at that time we did something like, I did 2 months with everyone, and then they selected from us, from the group, so-called potential officers, and we were given half a stripe and did more intense stuff, and even some sort of trigonometry training for anti-aircraft, that type of thing. But as soon as one was made slightly different from the main body of people, one was treated about twice as hard by the non-commissioned officers who were running the setup, which was very interesting. It was a dreadful place near Aldershot. I mean, awful First World War huts one was living in, and sort of sanitary conditions were appalling, and the lighting and everything. It was a miserable existence. And we all went down, the whole lot, everyone, down to a camp called Cleve Camp near Bude over Christmas 1940, which was a firing practice camp. And there we did man guns, which were not really proper heavy anti-aircraft guns. Again, there was a shortage of them. We practiced on naval 3-inch guns, which were known to be quite incredibly noisy. I think that's part of the cause of my deafness. I mean, when you've been firing those things, you couldn't hear really for about 2 or 3 days afterwards. And that was quite interesting training, but it taught one a lot about discipline. Oh, it was a miserable thing. I mean, Christmas there was absolute hell with a sergeant major in charge. And for instance, I don't know if this is of any interest.
No, it isn't.
There was a Christmas lunch there where all the gunners were seated, and we were told we weren't to start, nothing was to happen until the commanding officer had come to wish us a happy Christmas, which he didn't for hours, you know, because he was drinking with the other officers in the mess, that sort of thing. And it was very useful being a gunner under those conditions, and going on later to be an officer to sort of train how not to behave, you know, and how to treat men, which is very interesting. And then from there we went back, I think, to Aldershot, and then we were sent to various officers' training units. And I went to one in Landrindod out this way, I suppose, for 5 months. And that was a ridiculous experience, too. I mean, we did quite a lot of training, but there was an amazing shortage of equipment to train on. And it was quite interesting, a mixture of people like myself who hadn't been in action at all, and there were people who'd been in action as gunners and had come back to train as officers. And it was, apart from anything else, it was a very pleasant life, though, in Landrindod, which is a spa. And there were a lot of hotels which had been taken over by the army, so we were accommodated in really quite a lot of comfort. But there was nothing to do in a place like Landrin or in one's spare time at all. I think the sort of peak of entertainment was a little orchestra of about four women who performed in the Winter Gardens on Sunday mornings. It was, but there was quite good drinking in pubs. And then what, I became commissioned. I'm sorry, is this sort,
yes,
this
is.
Sort of thing?
Yes,
right. Exactly right. I became commissioned in May 1941, and you were asked what you wanted to do. And I'd again tried to get out of the army while in the officers' training unit, again thinking I'd be much more use if I went on doing medicine. And I was virtually given a sort of white feather and told there wasn't much good anyhow. I was going to be put back if I didn't pull myself together. So I thought, well, I might as well go on. And I thought, well, I'd like to get into a mobile unit and get around the world. And so I put my name down for a mobile heavy anti-aircraft unit. And sure enough, after leave, I was posted to Geordie, a Newcastle unit, 87th Heavy Anti-Aircraft Unit, which had been in action for throughout the war up at Middlesbrough, but they were doing mobile not fixed guns, and they're going to do mobile training and before going to abroad. So I joined them once again in this part of the world, in Oswestry, where there was a training camp, and we took over these huge 3.7 anti-aircraft guns, mobile ones, and did mobile training all around there for a month. And it was a very pleasant unit to be with, mostly Geordies. In fact, all the men came from some places like Heaven and all the long round Tyne there, tough little men, and very pleasant officer people to join. And we were there a month. Then we went up into Yorkshire to Wakefield to equip and getting all our own guns, trucks, everything from around there. And off we went in August. Went up to Gourock, and 6 to 8 weeks at sea. It was fantastic. We were to go to Iraq, and I mean, I don't know if this is of interest. Is it the ship? We got on in this huge convoy, which was going out to some to the Middle East and some on to Singapore. But after 2 days at sea, one thought one was getting down towards Africa or somewhere. We were off the shore of Iceland. You know, the convoys did these enormous circuitous trips. And after 2 weeks, we actually did reach Freetown, where there was a pause. And another 2 weeks, we reached Cape Town, which was very, very pleasant once we went on shore and saw quite a lot of that. And then another 2 weeks, we reached Bombay, of all places. And there, our unit and other units there transferred onto an incredibly ancient boat called the Neuralia, which I think had almost been sunk in the First World War, was just surviving, and went up the Persian Gulf to Basra. And I think a lot of the rest of the convoy went on to Singapore and were immediately taken prisoner, most of the units.
Did you know that you were going to the Middle East?
Yes, we were told. That's right. We're equipped with sort of tropical, so-called tropical gear and everything. Hmm.
What were the conditions like on the boat from Gourock and all the entire route?
Quite incredibly comfortable. I was on, I think, a boat, a P&O boat called the Strathallan, and as an officer you had a cabin. I mean, I think there were four of us sort of crowded into a cabin which was only meant for two, but perfectly comfortable. And of course, after England, wonderful food, because this boat is, say, stocked up in South Africa or somewhere with food, and it was extremely comfortable and good for the officers. But my men, I wasn't part of a battery or a troop then. I was looking after what they called first reinforcements or something, the extra people or the men. And they were down on H deck, which was right down at the bottom of the ship. And that was pure hell, I think, that for them. But, I mean, we had plenty of time up on deck and there was a swimming pool and everything. It was really quite pleasant.
Did you have duties and
duties
on board?
Yes, there was a gun on the stern, and we took it in turns to man this. I don't think we never went into action. There were boats in the convoy which were sunk, and there were sort of frequent alarms. And when there was an alarm, whether it was a drill practice or a genuine alarm, I had to go down to bring my men up from H deck. And so that when everyone else was coming up, I went down, and once or twice I got sort of stuck down below when people closed the waterproof doors. So I was never quite sure if I'd be sunk with the ship or not. But it was only during practices, I think. Anyhow, we reached Basra, and it was really an education for everyone. They were sort of camped out in outside Basra in the desert there, preparatory to going up further north, and the conditions were appalling there. And I think the whole regiment, 500, went down with a sort of so-called jippy tummy and violent diarrhea after about 3 days living there. And I was rather the lucky, though, because we would take these heavy mobile guns, and we were to go to the Habaneer, which was the RAF Air Force place, which was about 50 miles west of Baghdad. And nothing like these our heavy guns had sort of been up on before. And there was a railway, I think, which was coming down to Basra, but there was no road even up to Baghdad from the south in those days. It was just a track over the desert. And so I was sent up ahead. Well, at least to begin with, I think there were three or four of us going up on motorbikes to plan out our sort of route and camping sites. But motorbikes were totally impossible in the sandy condition. And so it was only I went up in a truck. And took it fairly easy, and as a result I saw and had a good look at places like Ur of the Chaldees, and later on sort of Babylon and Nineveh and places. It was a fascinating country, Iraq. But we went to Habaneer, and we set up anti-aircraft defences there. Was never any action, but it was a wonderful RAF centre there by the River Euphrates, I think it was there, and so they were able to water the place, and they had gardens and every sort of comfort, whereas we were out in the desert outside in the most awful sort of conditions doing the anti-aircraft defense. And we were there for some time, and one of the troubles there was local people were absolute expert thieves, and they'd come in, I think, in nights, sneak into the camps naked and greased and pinched things, even from the sort of guard tent. They'd take out the weapons and things, very skillful. Or officers would wake up in their little tents in the morning with absolutely stripped of everything. Very skillful. And after some time there, we went up further north, and we had a unit halfway up to Mosul, another one, I think, in Mosul, a battery, and a third one over in Kirkuk. And then I became a sort of regimental orderly officer, which is really a sort of assistant adjutant at the regimental headquarters. And I used to travel around to these various places on various jobs and things, which was very interesting.
Did you see much of the local people did you work with?
Quite a bit, yeah. Mm. And nice people. I like the Iraqis. I mean, it was terribly primitive in the villages and simple, but pleasant people. And we travelled quite a lot of the Middle East afterwards, and always struck me as the Iraqi, by and large, were the most sort of intelligent, as a matter of fact. But it was winter in Iraq by then. I mean, we'd sailed off in August. I think it was beginning of August, that's right, and we settled in Iraq, and we were there till February. It was quite incredible up in the north there. It was remarkably cold and a lot of snow. And we heard that a division was coming over from the Middle East, I think the 50th Division, and we were to go with them up into the Caucasus to help the sort of Russians and perhaps stem the German advance down that way through the Caucasus of the Middle East. But apparently the story went that the Russians didn't want us after all. And so all we did in Iraq was prepare defense positions and sites. I mean, there was no action at all. It was after there had been a sort of uprising in Iraq, so we didn't even have to calm down the local people, who were, a lot of them were anti-British, as a matter of fact. And so come February, we were moved, and we crossed over the desert and we went to the defense of Beirut. And there we were in action a certain amount, shooting at planes. I don't think we brought anything down. But again, that was an extremely pleasant life. Beirut was a lovely place, very Frenchified.
Where were you billeted there? Where were you? Yeah.
Well, I was with the regimental headquarters in what was really a sort of block of apartments, quite inadequate for the number of people you were there, built on sand, but perfectly reasonable. And, you know, I took my men swimming every day, and we had a lot of sporting activities. But I also had a spell on a gun site, which was in the American University there, again by their swimming pool, which was very nice. But I shot at planes from there. I don't think we hit anything at all. But I used to go and even dine with the president of the university. Very civilized. And then we were there for a long time, you know, hoping we'd get into somewhere we could do more. And then suddenly we were asked to, we were sent down to go and join the 8th Army. It was just at time of Alamein. And so off we went, and went through Cairo up into the Western Desert. And we went into Tobruk. We got as far as Tobruk and set up the fence there. And that was fairly active. I mean, Tobruk was still the little port which was supplying the 8th Army, the front line, which was just ahead of us. So there was quite a bit of action there, and we did quite a lot of shooting and shooting down one or two German planes.
Yes, what form did that action take with the with these German aircraft attacking?
Yes, there was these Stuka dive bombers. The harbour was absolutely packed with wrecks of Allied ships which had sunk there. And there was a lot of anti-aircraft. And we were the heavy anti-aircraft all around Tobruk. And there were, I think, certainly at least one light anti-aircraft regiment. And one used to fire up in a sort of pattern when there was an air raid, mostly at night, and where one couldn't. I think by then we had radar, but you couldn't very effectively follow the plane. And one fired up in sort of set patterns, you know, hoping you'd get something which was diving down.
Were your batteries ever on the receiving end of German attention?
No, I don't think so. I mean, there were bombs dropped, but I don't think any sort deliberately at us, no, or accidentally hitting us, no. I mean, it was pretty passive, really. It wasn't a very massive attacking of Tobruk then.
How closely would you work with the RAF as well, or were you in touch with them at all?
There was an RAF station outside. No, we didn't really much. So, I mean, really, there were we, and that was in 42. By that time, I'd really had virtually no action whatsoever of any consequence at all. And I think, and then I was a sort of assistant adjutant or something of that sort. And while doing that, I went back to Cairo and did an intelligence course. I'm not quite sure why. It was quite interesting, you know, all about the sort of German army and subversion of one sort and another. And
was there a school at Helwan? Is that right? Is there one just outside Cairo?
It could well have been. Yes, I can't. Yes. And I think. Oh, it was. Probably about, yes, early in 1943, I was suddenly posted to GHQ Cairo as a staff officer in the sort of anti-aircraft branch of the RA sort of section of GHQ. And so my job there was really concerned with the transport for anti-aircraft units all the way up through Libya in the 8th Army, and virtually sort of bidding for trucks and so forth coming out from England and directing them up to the various units. I mean, it's quite interesting and sort of busy and valuable work to begin with. There were all sorts of extra things like helping to supply trucks for the when there was a British set-up invasion against Kos and Leros, the Greek islands, or we sent quite a lot of equipment to Turkey, which was really sort of bribery, hoping the Turks would let one in through that way. So it was quite interesting work. And, I mean, honestly, a very pleasant life. I used to go to the so-called Gezira Club every afternoon, play tennis, squash, golf, rugger, swim. I mean, because one always had the afternoon off. One worked all the morning, and we worked sort of into the evening. So it was an excellent life. But then slowly, the war got further and further away, and it became, got fed up with it, really. And it seemed to be with a whole lot of people who were in GHQ justifying their existence, which took a lot of doing, I think, and avoiding sort of packing up. And so I decided to get out of it. And I knew a number of people in MO4, which was the SOE equivalent there. And I had a friend from school who was attached to the sort of Greek section and was dropped into Greece.
Who was that? Can you recall his name? This
chap called Ronald Prentice. I didn't possibly come across. Yeah. I mean, there were a lot of people like that.
I've come across him. His papers are
yes.
At London University.
And, now there was Hillary King, who became signals officer with Fitzroy McLean and Tito. I mean, he used to come into office and know if we'd had any transport going up to various places where he was sending in, helping with agents and so forth. So I thought I'd try and get into MO4 and get away from inertia. And...
Just
sorry.